Hello again, everyone, wherever you may be, and welcome to the 167th edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week, your window on the world of Iowa politics, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capitol, what that news is, and what it all means. We're glad you're with us live on this Monday night, April 1st. No fooling, I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my longtime partner in politics, Laura Bellin of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Welcome, Laura.
Good to be here, and I never transmit fake news on April Fool's Day.
Well, on any day, we don't transmit.
On any day. But some people publish fake news stories on April Fool's, and that's never been my thing.
That's exactly right. You have to go to some other stations for that, but we won't talk about that. All right, we have a heck of a lot to hash out tonight, so let's hash it out. And it's about what the state legislature did since our last broadcast, and nothing gained more attention than the Senate vote on the state's AEAs, Area Education Agencies. It's a topic that simply has dominated the legislature like no other this session. Laura, last week the Senate passed the final bill on the AEAs. Take it from there.
Yes, this put to bed an issue that, as you say, had taken up a lot of the oxygen in the room all year. So the Senate debated this on Tuesday. It passed on a 30-18 vote with three Republicans joining the Democrats to vote against it. Remember, the first version of the AEA bill that the Senate had considered, six Republicans voted against it. So this had a lot of pieces to it. The main part will restructure the way area education agencies are funded. They provide special education and many other services to school districts and families and educators. Also, there are teacher pay and school funding provisions in this bill.
All right, we're going to go over it step by step and simplify it for everybody, including us. We should say first that this has been going back and forth between the governor, the House, and the Senate. The Senate passed the final version last week. So under this final bill, the AEAs, which are now the sole provider of special education services, would continue getting a significant amount of state funding that they now receive.
Yeah, so this coming year, they will continue to get 100% of the special education funding. And then starting in June of 2025, they will receive 90% of the state funds. And then school districts will have control over the remaining 10% of special education funding that they could spend with the AEA or they could spend with other providers.
The AEAs now receive, as I read this, about $185 million in special ed funding from the state. And federal special education funding would continue to go to the AEAs.
That's right. The bigger concern for the AEAs are the provisions on media and education services. AEAs offer all kinds of services, including professional development, gifted and talented. Media services include some assistive devices that kids with special needs use. It includes printing, some school curriculum, and all of those things. The school districts are going to be getting much more control over those funds. So this coming year, school districts will have control over 60% of the funds, 40% will go to the AEAs. And then starting in July of 2025, the school districts will get 100% of that media and education services funding, and they will not have to spend it on comparable services. They could use it for any general fund need. So for instance, they could decide to use it to raise teacher pay or to keep classroom sizes small.
Now, none of this was on anybody's agenda until the governor mentioned it, highlighted it in her condition of the state address in January. So how did the fault lines break down between Democrats, Republicans, big districts, small districts?
Well, Democrats were uniformly against doing anything this year other than creating a task force to study issues related to AEAs. And by the way, the final bill, it does include a task force to study some things, but of course it implements major changes before the task force releases a report. But the fault lines, I mean, really from the public's perspective, the overwhelming public response was that they did not want this legislation to pass. Many legislators from both parties said that they got thousands of messages about this, and most of them were against the AEAs. In terms of the school district leaders, there were a small number of superintendents who were supportive of changes, but the larger number of superintendents, and that included big school districts, small rural school districts, they are very concerned about this change. And particularly the smaller districts worry that if the AEAs don't have that critical mass of funding, they aren't going to be able to provide the wide range of services they do now. And whereas in a large metro area, you might be able to find some private business or independent contractor to give you those services, in rural Iowa, it's going to be very difficult, for instance, to get a school psychologist.
So the governor specifically mentioned that there were nine AEA areas, and she seemed to not like that and wanted to reduce it. Does this bill address any of that?
It does not reduce the nine AEA areas. So one thing that it does is that the AEAs right now, they cover areas including multiple school districts. And this bill does allow school districts, if they want to, they can contract with an AEA that's in a neighboring area, even if their own school district is within one AEA. If they want to receive services from a nearby AEA that's contiguous, they can do that. But other than that, it doesn't change the structure. It does one thing that the governor was reportedly very upset about was that she learned that the salaries for the executive directors, the leaders of each of these nine AEAs, tend to have high salaries. Most of them have PhDs, and many of them were making on the order of $300,000 a year. And she was very upset by that. So this bill caps the salaries for the leaders of the AEAs at it puts them, it pegs them to what the average superintendent salary is in the area that they cover.
So let's bottom line this for parents who have children in need of special education services, what will they see differently in the next year or two?
Well, it depends, right? Because Governor Reynolds is saying that all the services will still be there that people need, but there's a lot of concern in the community of people raising kids with disabilities. There have already been a number of staff resignations from within the AEAs just because of the instability. So they're worried that even if the funding doesn't immediately disappear, that some of these specialists who help their kids may. And there were questions raised during the Iowa House debate about certain things. There are services the AEAs provide to childcare providers, for instance, early childhood services, and it's not exactly clear what's happening with those programs. In theory, the services available to people with kids who need evaluations from birth to age five, those should remain intact. But again, if physical therapists, speech therapists, occupational therapists, if some of those people start quitting the AEAs, it's just not clear whether all of those services will remain available.
So this bill did not just address the AEAs, it also addressed minimum pay for starting teachers and per pupil funding.
So this, the teacher pay aspect grew out of Governor Reynolds' proposal, and the reason for including it in this bill, obviously, was to get more people to want to vote for changes to the AEAs, because there were a lot of Republican legislators who were very hesitant to support the AA restructuring, but they liked the teacher pay. So the governor's proposal originally was to make the minimum starting salary $50,000. This will get to that level in year two. For the coming year, the minimum teacher salary in Iowa will be $47,500, and then in year two and beyond, it'll be $50,000. The other thing the governor wanted to do was have at the teachers with at least 12 years of experience would have a minimum salary of $60,000. That's going to be $60,000 in the first year, and that's going to rise to $62,000 in year two and beyond. I mean, one issue that I've heard people talking about in the education community is that this bill did not include funding to bring other teachers' salaries up who are between that 1 year and 12 years. So you could have a situation in some school districts where starting teachers are paid 47,500, and then veterans with 6 or 8 or 10 years of experience might be brought up to the same level, but they might not be getting paid more than their colleagues who have less experience.
And as we said, the bill would also increase state per pupil aid to schools by 2.5%, an increase of $191 per pupil.
And this is something that the governor wanted, this 2.5% level. The House Republicans had passed a separate bill that would have increased the state aid to school per pupil by 3%. And the Democrats, of course, wanted something more on the order of 5 to 6%. I want to emphasize, we've talked about this before. This does not mean that every school district is going to get 2.5% more money that they than they got last year. This will mean 2.5% per pupil. So a lot of school districts have declining enrollment. And what we're going to see is a lot of school districts will get fewer dollars next year than they did this year, just by virtue of the declining enrollment. And that's a great concern because a number of the fixed costs for school districts do not relate to per pupil, right? I mean, they cost the same to run school buses, to heat and cool buildings, and so on. So that's where it starts to get difficult. And of course, costs for schools are rising by more than 2.5%. And so that this is probably going to lead to some cuts either to staff or programming in a lot of districts.
And to wrap this one up, the governor, pardon me, signed the bill. Boy, I need some help right now. Maybe a cough drop on this Monday night. The governor signed the bill into law Wednesday in a ceremony in her office. Democrats not happy at all. Not happy.
No. And the governor, I mean, she basically declared victory, even though this is quite different from her original proposal, which would have given school districts 100% of the funding and no guarantee that they would spend it with the AEAs. But she was basically willing to call this a win. Democrats are very upset that this passed. They think that this is going to do huge damage to services, not only for special education, but for general education because of some of the services that AEAs provide in terms of printing and curriculum and professional development. And so I believe that this will become a major issue in a lot of state legislative races this fall.
And if you're wondering why we spend 10 minutes on this Monday night, it was that big an issue in the legislature. And now it's out of the way. And there's everything else that has to take place maybe in the next few weeks. Let's talk about it. Action in the state Senate today, Monday, they passed a bill unanimously on diagnostic breast exams.
Yeah, there were a lot of non-controversial bills debated in the Iowa Senate, and one of these would, and there's a companion bill in the House as well. This would relate to women who have particularly dense breast tissue where it's often difficult to identify anomalies with a regular mammogram. So this would require insurance coverage for other types of diagnostic tests, particularly MRIs, which are important for people with dense breast tissue. And the floor manager of the bill, Republican State Senator Sherry Lynn Westridge, read out a message from someone who had written to her about this bill, who had had this experience of a cancer that was not caught early because she had had a mammogram but hadn't had one of these other diagnostic tests. So this passed unanimously.
And on this day, the Senate also unanimously approved a bill on judicial hearings being conducted, yes, remotely.
This was one of the things the judicial branch had asked the legislature to do. During the pandemic, they changed some things with their procedures and they allowed more hearings to take place remotely with attorneys or other people, defendants, participating remotely. And then when the governor's pandemic emergency declaration expired, the authorization for some of those things expired as well. So this is just going to basically make permanent, one of the pandemic adjustments for the judicial branch. So it'll just be easier for people to participate remotely in certain kinds of court proceedings.
And last week in the Senate, they passed a bill allowing younger teens to drive themselves to work.
Yeah, this was basically a party line vote. I mean, this is something that Iowa is lets people drive pretty early, 14 and a half. You can get your permit at age 14. And then a lot of people, even before they have a regular license, are able to drive, for instance, to or from school, certain types of farm jobs. But this bill would let 14 and 15-year-olds drive to any kind of job and not just a farm job and not just school. So it was controversial for that reason. And I remember from looking into this a few years ago when they debated a similar bill that many other states do not allow kids under 16 to drive in this situation.
There was also a Senate subcommittee hearing last week for the state's newly appointed education leader, and there were some issues involved with the confirmation hearing on Mackenzie Snow.
And this is rare. The Senate Democrats exercise their ability to hold, call for a public hearing on one of the governor's appointees. I really can't remember the last time this happened. It's more common in the Iowa House that Democrats are able to call for public hearings on a bill. But they scheduled this for really early in the morning. And Mackenzie Snow, several comments at the hearing criticized the fact that she's very light on teaching experience. She has a political science degree. She does. Most people who have held that position of director of the Department of Education have had a higher degree and usually a doctorate in education and a lot more experience in administration. But she certainly, I think, is going to get confirmed in the Senate. They have the votes to confirm her without any Democratic support.
And last week, a Senate subcommittee advanced the Gadsden license plate bill. That's the Don't Tread on Me license plate.
Yes, this is one that the House passed a few weeks ago. So the main controversial aspect of this is that it would create a specialty plate that had that "Don't Tread on Me" flag with a rattlesnake, and the proceeds from it would go to programs with firearms training. And the way the bill is written, it would give preference to programs of the Iowa Firearms Coalition, which is the state affiliate of the NRA. So when the House debated this, Democrats were upset about the idea of funding a private organization, and some of them also upset that this would be the NRA. When it went through the Senate subcommittee, I was a little surprised by the skepticism from the Republicans on the committee. They said one of them, State Senator Jason Smith, or Jason Schultz, rather, who's a very pro-gun, and he said that he would rather, instead of seeing the funding go to a private organization, he would rather see the funds go, for instance, to school safety programs. And there were also concerns about how many specialty license plates Iowa already has. I think it's on the order of 90. And so there were concerns about that. But the two Republicans on the committee did advance the bill, but they indicated that there may be an amendment that redirects the proceeds away from the NRA's Iowa affiliate.
90 license plates, that's a lot. All right, what's later this week in the Senate?
Oh, well, you never know that they're a little bit cagey about what's going to be on the debate calendar, but the possible debate calendar, it includes things like a constitutional amendment on taxation, for instance, also a liability shield for pesticide manufacturers. This was a bill that didn't get through the funnel, but then it saw new life in the Senate Appropriations Committee, and also regulations on hemp consumable products, of including, for instance, the climbing kites beverages, that may be an issue that the Senate takes up this week.
All right, we're going to get to the House in just a moment, but first I have to say it is 15 minutes and 55 seconds after the hour, exactly, if you're listening to us live and you're in tune with KHOI Radio's Capital Week, your front row seat for everything political going on in Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bellin, and we are now in our fourth year of being here in this time slot to talk about politics with an Iowa flavor. And now this program is available as a podcast, and a lot of you have been downloading it. Just search for KHOI's Capital Week on your favorite platform, be it Apple or Google, Amazon Music, Spotify, and there we are. Again, it's KHOI's Capital Week. We are now as popular as disc jockeys, Laura.
Absolutely. And people should subscribe and also rate the podcast. That helps make it more visible to others.
There you go. All right, the House, oh, they had a few things going last week, didn't they? Maybe the biggest one. There were some big ones. This is a constitutional amendment on future tax hikes. That's right. It passed on a 61 to 35 vote. How would it work, Laura?
So the idea would be that to raise taxes, any kind of income tax or corporate income or individual income, you would have to get a two-thirds vote in the Iowa House and Senate. So right now, to pass bills, you just need a simple majority for any kind of bill. It would make it, in effect, impossible because, I mean, the odds of two-thirds of both chambers wanting to raise taxes, that would be infinitesimal. So that's the idea. This would it, originally the bill the, this constitutional amendment also included a provision on flat tax, and then they decided they're going to run that as a second amendment, a separate amendment, because there was a concern that the ballot language could be too long and cumbersome if they combined both of those in the same constitutional amendment.
So we should explain how this works. If the bill is approved by both chambers in this session, it would then go to next year's legislature. It has to be approved then by both chambers, and then it would be placed on the ballot.
That's right. So the Iowa is one of the most difficult states to amend the Constitution. So it has to be approved by two separately elected legislatures. So as you said, both chambers would have to approve it this year, and then after this November's election, they would have to come back in either 2025 or 2026 and approve it again to get it on the ballot. And usually constitutional amendments go on the ballot in line with a general election, but they don't have to. In 1999, the Republican-controlled legislature scheduled referendums in June of 1999 on two tax-related constitutional amendments. Those ended up both failing. But in any case, so it is possible that there could be a vote on this before the 2026 general election, but there certainly won't be a vote on it this November. The next legislature would have to approve this language again.
And just to reiterate, I love using that word, if this constitutional amendment is approved, it would require two-thirds of lawmakers to approve any future tax hikes. That would make it almost impossible to reverse tax cuts that Republicans have put into place. So that's the importance of this, and that's really what the Republicans wanted to do. They may lose some votes at some point, some power in the Senate and the House, but it would make it almost impossible for Democrats to reverse the tax cuts.
Right. And I mean, what we've seen in some states, Kansas is a prime example, where they passed some very deep tax cuts. And then later, after they had a budget crunch, the legislature reversed some of those. And so that's the scenario that they are trying to avoid with this amendment.
All right, let's move down to another big bill that passed last week, an eminent domain bill. You know, we've talked about this over the years here, always in the same format. The House passes a bill on eminent domain, and it goes to die a horrible death in the state Senate. Is that what's going to happen this time?
I think so. I don't see any indication that the state Senate is inclined to move this, but I will say that the chairman of the Senate Commerce Committee, Waylon Brown, is facing a primary challenger, a Republican, Doug Campbell, who is campaigning on this pipeline issue. And so there is a remote chance that he might want to move something like this through this committee, but I still think it's unlikely. This bill is quite different from last year's eminent domain bill. Last year would have restricted the process by saying that the pipeline company would have to get at least 90% of the landowners to agree voluntarily, and there were all kinds of other restrictions. This one is very different because it doesn't change the process for the Iowa Utilities Board, but it would allow people, either the company wanting to build the pipeline or people in the path of the pipeline, they could go to court earlier in the process to try to determine, is this a public use? Is this an appropriate use of eminent domain? Because under Iowa law, you can only use eminent domain for projects that have a true public purpose and relate to some public necessity. And what happened most recently with the Keystone XL, I'm sorry, the Dakota Access Pipeline, not Keystone XL, but the Dakota Access Pipeline, which crossed Iowa, is that eminent domain was approved, and then there was litigation that went on for years, but meanwhile, the pipeline was already built. So that's what they're trying to avoid with this bill. They're trying to make it possible for landowners to get the court to decide first, is this a project that even qualifies for eminent domain? And so in that way, it could be helpful. I mean, some people would tell you that there's would still be more that would need to be done to stop Summit Carbon Solutions from building the CO2 pipeline. But this seemed to be the most that they could get the votes for through the Republican caucus in the Iowa House.
So let's just agree to say that the fate in the Senate of this bill is, let's use the word uncertain.
Right. And this bill in the House, I want to mention that the Democrats did all vote for it. None of them spoke out for it during the debate, but they did all vote for the bill. Most of the Republicans voted for the bill. There were seven Republicans who voted against. Generally, those are people from rural areas or people with connections to agriculture. And we see some of the agriculture groups and the ethanol industry in particular was very against this bill because they want to see the CO2 pipeline built.
All right, let's briefly talk about some other things the Senate did last week. One of them was they passed a bill on property tax exemptions in forested areas.
So this is one of these land use bills that something like this comes up every year to try to, and this is something that the farm groups have proposed because they would like to see less land set aside for forestry. So in Iowa right now, there's a property tax exemption that relates to forests and fruit trees. And this would make it so that counties would have the ability to decide, hey, we don't want to do that property tax exemption anymore. And furthermore, it would also change it so that instead of parcels of at least 2 acres qualifying, you'd have to have a forested area of at least 5 acres. So there would be a lot of people who currently are getting this property tax exemption who would no longer qualify for it. So it was controversial for that reason. And all the Democrats voted against it. And nine Republicans also voted against it. So it was kind of similar to that stormwater and topsoil bill we talked about a couple of weeks ago. This one just barely passed. There were 51 Republicans who were willing to vote for it. And I don't know where it's going to go in the Senate. Usually the Senate has been more amenable to these land use bills.
And the Senate also passed a bill on shielding pesticide manufacturers.
The Senate, this was a House subcommittee moved this bill. This is again, it's similar. They're going to amend it, I think, to conform to the language in the bill pending that's pending in the Senate. The concept is this is a bill that Bayer, the manufacturer of Roundup, is pushing. The idea is that companies could not be sued under a portion of the law that says they have a duty to warn people about adverse health effects. So people who might think that their cancers or Parkinson's disease or other conditions were caused by exposure to pesticide would not be able to file suit in Iowa. And a lot of groups are very against this bill. And so it didn't make it through the funnel, but it came back to life in the Ways and Means Committee on the House side, which advanced it, a subcommittee advanced it last week. And on the Senate side, as I mentioned earlier, it went through the Appropriations Committee after that funnel deadline.
Something else interesting happened in the House last week. It was a hearing about Davenport by the House Committee on Oversight. And there seems to be a feeling that things are not going well or on the up and up among some Davenport officials.
Oh, remember that we had talked about last year, there was that tragedy in Memorial Day weekend in Davenport where there was the building that partially collapsed, killing three people. And it outraged a lot of people in Davenport and caused a lot of requests for public information. And there have been conflicts with the city council and the city government ever since that time. And this grew out of that issue because last fall, the city of Davenport signed settlements with several city employments that they kept secret. in possible violation of open meetings laws. They did not disclose these agreements before the election. And so there is all kinds of litigation ongoing now related to possible open records violations, open meetings violations. State Auditor Rob Sand is trying to get information from the city government related to these employee settlement agreements, and they have gone to court to resist his subpoena. So it's a big mess. But the House Government Oversight Committee hardly ever meets. The Senate Government Oversight Committee hasn't met in years, and the House Government Oversight Committee rarely meets. And when they do, it tends to be on an issue related to local government rather than state government. So this did fit that pattern. And we had bipartisan on the committee condemnation of what's gone on in Davenport, and a desire for, I don't know exactly what else the Oversight Committee is going to be able to do about it, but they certainly wanted to shine a light on the possible malfeasance over there.
And very briefly, the House has approved a bill dealing with this very type of situation. It's on the Senate's unfinished business calendar.
And I did ask State Representative Gary Moore, who's from the Davenport area. He was the one who introduced this bill that the House approved in February by, I think, 92 votes to 2. This would increase penalties for open records and open meetings violations and would require more training. It did get through committee on the Senate side. It has not been put on the debate calendar. It's on unfinished business. And I asked him about that last Thursday, and he said he's been having conversations with senators. He's the chair of the House Appropriations Committee, so he's in frequent communication with appropriators over on the Senate side. And he said he's really been pushing to get that bill off the unfinished business calendar, and we'll see where that goes.
Okay, 2.5 minutes left to go over three issues. The House and the Senate Republicans released their budget plans last week for the fiscal year 2025.
Yeah, and I don't want to get too detailed about the numbers, but the overall, the big picture is the House Republicans want to spend more than Governor Reynolds proposed in her budget. And Governor Reynolds wanted to spend a little more than what the Senate Republicans wanted to spend in their budget. And so it's not clear where they're going to meet. All of those budgets would propose to spend considerably less than the projected revenue for next year. So they're still budgeting for a surplus. It's not clear how much of a surplus there would be. I think the main arguments are in the next few weeks are going to be over programs the House wants to spend a little more money on than the Senate.
And very briefly, State Auditor Rob Sand accused State Attorney General Brenna Byrd, I don't think they like each other, of playing politics by freezing payments for sexual assault victims' morning after pills. This was a big deal last week.
Well, this came after the Des Moines Register published an article saying that the Attorney General's office still says that this review or audit of the victim services programs is not complete. And that's why Brenna Byrd halted payments. And Rob Sand called a press conference to say, this is not an audit. There's no audit. We're not auditing the program. No other CPA is auditing the program. This is at most, this is an internal review, but it's not even clear whether it is an internal review because this is not an enormous program. And this has now been more than a year since the Attorney General halted these payments. And he was basically saying, she's just trying to hide behind the idea of an audit that doesn't exist to avoid accountability for a policy decision that she made.
And about 45 seconds here, Governor Reynolds has again deployed troops to the Texas border. She has done this before.
Yes, and she already said that she was going to do this, but we got more details. So there are going to be 110 personnel from the National Guard that are will be going there and will be spending a little more than a month at working with their counterparts in Texas. There are also going to be 5 people in the National Guard who are going to be there on a longer deployment, closer to 6 months. And so and I thought it was interesting, her statement, she used the word invasion. Invasion is important because there's litigation going on now over a Texas immigration law that's similar to the one Iowa legislature passed, and that Texas is arguing that it's constitutional because they are being invaded by undocumented immigrants. And so Governor Reynolds adopted that language of an invasion to justify this deployment down in Texas.
And very briefly, where are you going this week in the legislature?
I'm going to be following whatever debate is happening on both sides. They're starting to consider appropriations bills, and so I'm going to be going to some of those committee and subcommittee hearings as well.
And you too can see Laura Bellin at the legislature this week, live and in person. And that's it. We're out of time for this live and in person show, Laura.
All right. I'll be here next week, Dennis.
I will too. You've been listening, I think, to Capital Week on KHOI Community Radio. I believe I'll be here. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura and I will be back here next week at the same time. Okay, we'll promise. And we'll be talking about everything interesting, important, or entertaining about politics, Iowa style. There's a lot of it. Until then, thank you so much for the privilege of your time. We appreciate it. We value it. Between now and then, let's all go ahead, please, and have a safe, healthy, and very happy week.